We welcome on Steve Roberts, political analyst, with a look at everything that's going on in the world. Steve, of course, this past week, it might be the most calm political week we've had in a long time, hasn't it, Ben?
Yes, in one way, but not in another, as Susan just mentioned. Kamala Harris is certainly enjoying a honeymoon, and Democrats are bursting with energy and relief. I mean, not only did the Harris campaign raise $200 million, they, according to their own figures, they signed up 170,000 new volunteers. You look at the ABC poll out this morning, Harris's favorable ratings has jumped from 35 to 43, while Trump's has dropped from 40 to 36. You look at the national polls, and a week or two ago, Trump was leading comfortably by about 6 points. Now it's down to 1 or 2 points, depending on the poll. All we can say this morning, 99 days before the election, is that this election has been reset. Democrats a week or two ago were mired in defeatism, and they were demoralized. Their energy was way down. Now they have a burst of optimism that they at least are in the ballgame. And intensity matters so much in politics, because if you're energetic, it means people give money, they talk to their friends, and they go out to vote. This election is not about converting people from the other side. It's about getting your own supporters, your own natural base, energized and make sure they get out to vote. So what we can say this morning is that the election's been reset, and Donald Trump knows it. I mean, he's been complaining for days now about the fact that he was all set to run against Joe Biden and run up a historic victory. And now he's in a fight, and he knows it.
You know, Harris is riding a wave right now, no question about that. But she is eventually is going to have to answer to Biden policies, especially inflation and immigration, right?
Absolutely, Susan. You know, running for president as an incumbent vice president is a very, very difficult thing to do, because you have to do two things at once. You have to defend the record of the administration you've been serving in, and you also have to portray yourself as an agent of change. And that's an inherently mixed message. And you know what? In our entire history as a country, only two sitting vice presidents, only two, have ever been directly elected president. Everybody remembers George Bush, 41 in 1988. Before that, the only other vice president, leaving aside the first couple of vice presidents, was Martin Van Buren in 1836, succeeding Andrew Jackson. Look at Al Gore, look at Hubert Humphrey, look at so many vice presidents who have run into this problem. And she's going to face this. You're absolutely right. She has advantages, but she has vulnerabilities. And because she's been part of the Biden administration, she's got to answer for inflation. She's got to answer for immigration. Now, she's a better advocate for the one issue that really works for Democrats, which is abortion. She's a much more vigorous and effective messenger on that issue than Biden ever was. But it is an inherently mixed message to say, I'm defending the past, but also I'm the candidate of the future at the same time.
And it's tough to really kind of gauge where people are. People going to pay attention to that, Steve? I've been wondering over the past week, as her campaign has gotten such enthusiasm, and most of the enthusiasm, quite frankly, seems to be, hey, it's not Joe Biden anymore. You know, we got somebody else running. If voters will care that much about where she stands on a lot of these issues, where, quite frankly, we don't really have that great of a track record or a lot of recent experience to pull from with exactly who Kamala Harris is. In voters' minds, who she is, well, she's not Donald Trump, and she's younger than 81 years old. And in the end, might that all be that matters?
Sure. I mean, the single most important thing about Kamala Harris is she's not Joe Biden. And therefore, she's deprived Donald Trump of by far his single best argument, which is that Biden was too old and frail to be president. And look at the fact, for instance, that in a number of polls around the country, if you look at Senate races, Democratic Senate candidate has been running significantly ahead of Joe Biden. So that tells you it's not necessarily the Democratic brand that's the problem. It was Biden personally. And there are a lot of elements here. But yes, the single most important thing about Harris is not who she is, it's who she is not. and it's the fact that she's 59 years old, not 81 years old. But as we've said, she does have to answer for the Biden administration policies, particularly on inflation and immigration. But there is another element here I want to highlight, and that is the potential for sexism. One of the main reasons Hillary Clinton lost in 2016 was the lingering sexism in this country. It wasn't the only reason she lost, maybe not the main reason, but it was part of the mix. And America lags way behind the rest of the world in terms of electing women as chief executives. Think about a whole generation ago or two generations ago when Britain was run for years by Margaret Thatcher. Think about Angela Merkel running Germany for all those years. America yet has had, now they broke the color barrier with Barack Obama, but not the gender barrier. And you can see just right barely below the surface, the sexist tropes starting to emerge. Donald Trump talking about Kamala Harris's laugh. Come on, would he ever lampoon the laugh of a man? The answer clearly is no. When he talks about Kamala Harris being a lunatic, what is he really saying? It's all the old tropes about, oh, women are too emotional, women can't be counted on in a crisis. So one of the things to keep your eye on here going forward is to what extent do the Republicans try to employ those sexist tropes, and to what extent can it potentially backfire? Because the world is different than it was 8 years ago when Hillary Clinton ran. And one of the ways it's different was the Dobbs decision reversing Roe v. Wade. And that gives the potential, all you can say today is the potential, for Harris to make the argument to female voters, particularly sort of moderate suburban women, saying, look, the Dobbs decision, which was passed by justices and approved by justices Trump approved and Trump dominated, it says to you as women, not just that you're deprived of your rights to control your own reproductive system, but they disrespect you. And they disrespect me and they disrespect you. That could be a very powerful argument with at least some segment of the electorate if Harris can make that argument effectively.
Hey, Steve, quickly here, who are undecided anymore? Polls say up to 9% are. Do you believe 9% are undecided?
Well, it's a funny definition. You know, a lot of people who tell pollsters they're undecided have a history of voting one side or another, tended to, there aren't many undecided voters. That's true. And look, you got to remember, the last two elections have been extremely close. All the cliches are true. A shift of 80,000 votes in three states would have made Hillary Clinton president. A shift of 40,000 votes in three states would have given Donald Trump a second term. So you don't have, you're talking about a handful of marginal voters in a few states. But if Harris can utilize the issue of abortion to speak to particularly to women voters just along those margins, maybe voters who are traditionally Republicans, including women who are upset about inflation. But if she can make the argument that the Republicans do not respect you as a woman, do not respect your independence, do not respect your autonomy, this, in my mind, can be a potentially critical element in this election going forward.
Steve, thank you. Steve Roberts joining us live.